Hello and welcome to the Majlis podcast, Ready for Breed Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Ready for Breed Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. It's been almost 2 weeks since the collapse of the Afghan government and the rise of the Taliban militants into power in Afghanistan. But the position of Central Asia remains unclear as to what exactly they are thinking about the developments in their neighbor. Until this Wednesday, though, when the Tajik president took a decisive position when he told the visiting Pakistani foreign minister that his government won't recognize any administration in Afghanistan created by humiliation and ignoring the interests of the people of Afghanistan as a whole. He was clearly pointing at the need for an inclusive government in Afghanistan in which ethnic minorities in Afghanistan, especially Afghan Tajiks, play a visible role. This comes following unconfirmed reports of hundreds of fleeing Afghan servicemen taking shelter in Tajikistan, about which authorities in Dushanbe say very little, if any. This also comes in the wake of an active anti-Taliban campaign run by the Afghan ambassador in Dushanbe. Following this public remarks by Rahman, we also hear hundreds of Tajik natives committing to volunteer to fight along with Panjshiri leaders in Afghanistan, led by the ethnic Tajik leaders, namely Ahmed Massoud, the son of the legendary Afghan Tajik leader Ahmed Shah Massoud, who is leading the anti-Taliban resistance there. And of course, throughout the recent escalation, Tajik military has been kept on high alert with frequent military drills, sometimes in collaboration with the armed forces of neighboring countries across the border in Tajikistan. Now, these are straightforward headlines that I have seen throughout the last few days. So, how to read them in the context of the developing situation in Afghanistan? What does it tell us? What has motivated President Rahman to stand out among his Central Asian counterparts and say what he said? And what might be next? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Paul Strunsky, Senior Fellow in Carnegie Endowment's Russia and Eurasia Program, Khiroman Vekiyeva, Senior Journalist with Radio Free Breed Liberty's Tajik Service, locally known as Radio Ozodi, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Breed Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Dr. Parviz Mullajanov was also supposed to join us today, but I don't see him active on Skype. Perhaps he will join us during the conversation. So thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us today. So, Khiroman, you know, you just came back from Dushanbe. Perhaps we could start with you. You know, the things that I have mentioned mostly comes from your service, Radio Ozodi, which has been doing an incredible job with so many breaking stories. So why not you describe us this gradual process leading to the situation in which people are now encouraged or perhaps tolerated by the authorities to openly say that they are ready to go to Afghanistan to fight against the Taliban. It's kind of incredible. So let's do kind of a reality check, Khiroman, first. And then in the next half of the program, we will try to unpack them and try to make sense of what they all mean and where things are possibly headed going forward. So, Khiroman, describe us this gradual process in Tajikistan coming to this point.
Thank you very much, Mohammed. I would say in the beginning that the situation in Afghanistan, as I was witnessing in Tajikistan among very, very normal people, it's very important for everybody now. And no one in Tajikistan is taking this information from the neighboring country easily because Tajikistan passed civil war. Tajikistan knows what the war, first of all, is. And also it somehow knows what does the Islamic radicalism mean. And it is really a sensitive issue from the security point of view. And I observed that very, very, very important issue that touches many people. Doesn't matter, they are women, they are men, is the destiny of millions of women and girls in Afghanistan. And I myself describe it like when yesterday the women of Afghanistan were standing with one leg on democracy, hope, environment. So now they're forced to go back and again to close themselves at homes and to put burqas and again to deny their identity. So it is really painful issues for Tajik society. Therefore, from this context, we could say that it's a rare case when the public opinion is close to the official opinion. You mentioned that during a meeting with Mohammad Qureshi, Tajik president stressed with Mahmoud Qureshi, he stressed that Tajikistan is very concerned regarding the future, the instability of this country, neighboring country. Tajikistan shares 1,400-kilometer border with Afghanistan. It is very, very close neighbor of us. And it is really a matter of issue of your close brother, like people and government, they feel it. And therefore, when Emomali Rahmon made his first statement only after 8 days of coming Taliban to Kabul, it was really from one side a long awaiting statement. From another point, it was a lot of people were critically pointed it because they were waiting for quick reaction from Tajik government. But we understand that Tajikistan is part of very key organizations under Russian umbrella, Chinese umbrella, who have, as we know, a little different position toward Taliban. And finally, a lot of experts who are talking during last days, last weeks with Radio Ozodiz, they say that even if Rahmon is now telling that he's not going, or he's sending messages, he's not saying it openly that I'm not going to recognize Taliban government, but he sends messages that he's not going to tolerate the government that is he calls would be Islamic Emirate or would be built by force. And so Rahmon and his government is part of such organization like CSTO, like Shanghai organizations. And there are other players, big players, who finally make decisions what to do and how to behave.
With his statement, though, Rahmon kind of stands out among the members of this organization, CSTO. Their position so far is way softer in terms of Taliban. But Rahmon decided
especially
to go ahead.
Especially when you compare, for example, with the closest neighbors like Turkmenistan or Uzbekistan, who started their, we call easily, like hidden diplomatic mission, dialogue with Taliban earlier. Russia started a few years ago, even invited Taliban to Moscow. Right. That was big shock for many people that time. Right. Tajik government stands by his two legs in one foot, as we say in Tajik, and is telling that it is not on position of recognizing Taliban, because during all period of independence, Tajik government, especially with the coming of Karzai period from 2001, he was working only with the official government in Kabul. And his position, he never changed.
Yeah.
But how long he would keep on this word and in his position, we will see. I think that it's a matter of time.
And also, I think we have seen Taliban representatives meeting Turkmen authorities, Uzbek authorities, Russians, Chinese. I don't know if they also met with Tajiks. Was there any meeting?
It's really interesting issue. According to our sources, during negotiations in Qatar, where Taliban were meeting with the official Kabul representatives, and Ghani was still on power that time, those days, we learned that the head of diplomatic mission of Tajikistan in Qatar represented Tajikistan during those talks. But we had never had an opportunity to confirm, to talk to the people from Tajik government about that issue. It is something like a big taboo, you know. Even when we try to raise the issues of, for example, the role of Tajikistan as a transit country during all those processes, withdrawal processes, no one from official Tajik institutions is ready to openly comment it. But according to sources of Radio Ozodi, yes, they are aware what's going on. They may be in talk, but we couldn't call it dialogue.
It never happened in public, at least.
No.
That's what we can say. But Bruce, Rahmon raised very, very important point here. It is kind of rare situation in which you could see the authorities and general public taking the same side. It doesn't happen often in Central Asia, especially in Tajikistan. Perhaps this is what motivates President Rahmon to say what he said in his meeting with Foreign Minister Mahmoud Qureshi. You know, we are going to talk about his motivations and all other stuff just in a bit. But in terms of the gradual process that we were talking about with Rahmon, how you describe this process over the past 10 days from the time when Taliban taken over Kabul and to this point in which we clearly see where Tajikistan stands?
Well, I mean, I don't think there was much of a mystery of where Tajikistan stood on this. You know, I mean, that's the first time I heard that the Tajik ambassador or the representative in Qatar had actually sat in on talks. But, you know, while everyone else was engaged with the Taliban, was trying to show that, except I suppose Turkmenistan, where it was actually the Taliban that was showing that they were talking with Turkmen officials. But especially the Taliban made a big point about, you know, advertising who they'd been talking to. It's part of their much more polished PR campaign that they have this time, which I'd have to say that is different, but, you know, never with Tajikistan. So I'm not surprised that Rahmon said what he said or that he took the position that he did, you know, because it was pretty obvious, I thought, that Tajikistan was extremely unhappy with the prospect of a Taliban takeover in Afghanistan. Is extremely unhappy right now that the Taliban actually have achieved most of the success they were looking for. I mean, there's still some things up in the air, but, you know, right now you'd have to say they're the government of most of the country anyway. So, of course, Rahmon he's unhappy, and you kind of figured that was true anyway months ago, when even a year or two ago, when Tajikistan just didn't engage with them at all. There was no evidence that they were talking to the Taliban, even when, as you mentioned, there was all these other people, China, Russia, Uzbekistan, all kinds of people were talking to it, but never Tajikistan.
Yeah. Paul, is there anything stands out to you in this process, the gradual process that we are talking about?
You know, a few things. One of the things I would just like to sort of also note, if the representative in Qatar did sit in on those talks, that's interesting. But all the other countries that have been engaging with the Taliban, they've been engaging at a much, much higher level. The Chinese foreign minister met with the Taliban, a deputy foreign minister is for all these other countries. So even if that did happen, Tajikistan kept it on a very low and extremely quiet level. And I think that says a lot about the reticence of Tajikistan and the wariness of Tajikistan towards the Taliban for a very, very, very long time. So I think, you know, what Rahmon said is not surprising. I think, you know, the fact that, you know, the prospect of a Taliban victory and a Taliban very, you know, radicalized government is increasing every day. So now is the time to actually really kind of encourage a more inclusive, a different style government. If you wait too long, I think it is too late. So, you know, I think he's probably right to do it. I understand that some other countries have also been sort of pushing similar lines in private. I think China, Turkey, I believe Uzbekistan has as well, but always in private. And what I think is interesting is the fact that he's gone public, and it could be the fact that the Tajik people are concerned about this as well.
Khiraman, one more question about the Tajikistan's sort of reaction. You know, that was interesting what you said in terms of the people and the authorities taking the same line on this. What about the opposition? Have they said anything about this Rahmon's position or the developments in Afghanistan? Where their opinion falls?
They didn't comment on Rahmon's position. They called for peace, for stability, and also for inclusive government. And I think that it's again demonstrates the common will of Tajiks, that doesn't matter where they're based.
Interesting. So on the top of all that, the Afghan ambassador to Tajikistan is active anti-Taliban campaigning. Perhaps it has nothing to do with Tajikistan's position, but what he is saying falls in line with the current wave in the country. Perhaps Paul, as a former diplomat, can help us to understand how to read his activities in the context of the Tajikistan's bigger position. So what do all these statements, military drills, President Rahmon's unusual in public remarks, let me stress on this, President Rahmon's public statements, particularly in a meeting with the top Pakistani diplomat, which is known as Taliban's supporters. So what does that tell us? Let's continue the conversation talking about this and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate. Today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Paul Stronsky, Senior Fellow in Carnegie Endowment's Russia and Eurasia programs, Khiroman Bekiba, Senior Journalist with Radio Free Prede Liberty's Tajik service, locally known as Radio Azadi, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Prede Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awasi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing Tajikistan's increasingly visible position on the developments in Afghanistan. So, about President Rahmon's statement. Paul, maybe you would like to jump in here. How his remarks might be received in Moscow, in Tashkent, perhaps in Beijing? It's certainly not in line with the public standing of those countries.
No, it's not in line with the public standing of those countries, although I think it's probably more in line with the private and unstated sentiments of those countries. You know, one of the interesting things, I mean, I think we've seen a lot of the region sees Pakistan as a key player in this because of the connection to the Taliban. And we've seen the Pakistani foreign minister, I think he's traveling throughout the region, Iran as well, as we speak. And so I think, you know, it was a very blunt message back that of sort of dissatisfaction of the way things have developed and sort of a warning of what sort of government Rahmon and the Tajiks want. And I think, you know, usually Tajikistan isn't leading in international affairs. But in here, he seems to be doing the bidding of many other people. From what I hear from my contacts here in Washington, you know, the U.S. has given a very similar message in private during the CIA's director's visit there. But I think, you know, Rahmon, really for the first time in sort of my sitting here, is really using his clout and using it, you know, not just regionally, but also globally. I did see in the French press that he spoke with the French President Macron, and I believe he might be traveling to France. So I think, you know, this is really, you know, he's doing other people's business and increasing his clout and leverage and Tajikistan's leverage as a part of the solution here, if there is a solution.
Yeah, on his statement, I mean, I don't like to put you in this position at all, Paul, but if you were to be Putin, Vladimir Putin, how it would sound to you?
I mean, I think, you know, I don't know what's in Putin's head, but what I do know is that you know, the Russians have you know, talked a big talk about wanting, you know, the U.S. withdrawal for years and years and years, and now that it's become a sort of more chaotic withdrawal and the Taliban is back, although, you know, Russia has recognized that prospect and has been engaging in the Taliban with the Taliban. I don't believe that the Kremlin believes in any assurances that the Taliban has given that it won't target Russian interests, that it won't, and I think Central Asian states probably don't put a whole lot of creed into that. And I think, you know, for all the talk about how, you know, Russia is trying to expand its clout and be a sort of a security provider for the region, I really don't see Russia as having the real desire to do that. It doesn't have a great track record of being a security enhancer or security provider. It very often prefers to stand on the sidelines. So I think, you know, it's certainly going to help these countries, you know, shore up their borders, and the military drills, I think, are highly symbolic. But I don't think what Rahmon said in public is all that far from what Putin and others are thinking in private.
Bruce, I also wondered your thoughts about a similar question. I mean, is President Rahmon doing all these without any collaboration with Moscow, Tashkent, or Beijing? You know, what we thought earlier, Bruce, is Tajikistan is waiting for Moscow or Beijing to say what they have in mind in terms of the latest developments in Afghanistan, but certainly he decided to go ahead of them. So is it happening in collaboration with those countries, or he's just doing it anyway?
No, absolutely. I think Paul was exactly right with his assessment of what's going on here. And I've been thinking about that, too. How is Rahmon so confident now that he's taking this position when he's really kind of hanging out there alone at the moment? And the only thing that I could think of was, I mean, there's a couple of things, and I'll do domestic, too. But as far as like foreign policy, I was thinking exactly that, you know, it might even be to the point where Russia and Tajikistan are doing this good cop, bad cop thing, you know, with the Taliban. And strangely, you know, Tajikistan is cast as the bad cop here because Russia's saying, look, we can get along with them. We can reach some understandings. There's no reason to panic. All of a sudden, that's what Russia's saying. You know, whereas Rahmon seems to be, you know, he's clearly taking a much more hard line on having them over there. And at the least, he's been getting assurances from Moscow. He must have. Or he wouldn't stick his neck out this far, you know, with a 1,200, 1,300 kilometer long border that's easy to get across. It's amazing that he would make statements like that. I also considered, too, that, of course, Tajikistan came off on the better end of that very brief conflict with Kyrgyzstan, and that might also bolster him a little bit. He might actually have much more confidence in his country's military than maybe he should. You know, so that would help. But I would imagine that really it's other people behind him saying, don't worry, we got you covered on this one. Go ahead and make these kind of statements and get that out there. You know, also, I think clearly in terms of nationalism, it plays well that he's saying, you know, that the rights of ethnic Tajiks have to be recognized in Afghanistan and they have to be part of the political process. And, you know, that plays well at home. But at the same time, you got to remember, too, that as mentioned, he's really anti-political Islam. You know, he doesn't want that. And in fact, he kicked his own group out. You know, obviously, the Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan got booted out of the country. You know, so the Taliban government is, you know, like a nightmare for him. So he's kind of keeping the same line here, right? The same reasoning that he used to get rid of the Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan applies even more so to the Taliban. So there's a continuity of his view on, you know, the role of Islam in politics at the same time.
Yeah, so. I was planning to ask actually whether Rahman really mean what he say. I guess the answer is yes, he means it. Also, like as blunt as he was in his remarks about the Taliban, is it going to make any difference in Afghanistan?
Let me just say that we didn't hear until now anything, any reaction from Taliban to those words, but it could be because they are very busy with this new government formation, and we could maybe wait for their reactions or some message, special messages for their opposition later, I suppose.
I was also thinking in this line, of course, Taliban might be busy, especially in the context of this airport attack. I don't know how they are going to come out of that situation. That's kind of another different story. But have you heard, Khroman, from those ethnic Tajik leaders, either inside in Panjshir who are leading the anti-Taliban resistance force or maybe Tajik leaders who have fled? I mean, have they reacted on Rahman's statement so far?
No, we didn't hear about their reaction because maybe there are much more important issues for them, I mean, in broad Afghan issue point of view. But as you heard Ahmad Massoud interview, his exclusive interview to BBC a few days ago, he was talking openly in Tajik to Persian service, and he was telling openly that he is still supporting any dialogue with the Taliban. Otherwise, he told, if there is no any discussions with them or they are not going to take into consideration the issue of minorities of other parts of society, they are ready to fight. So I think that there is really ongoing process that many, many politicians inside of the country, they still don't know what to wait from the new government or from future government, that it's obvious that there would be Talibans. So it's really tricky issue.
Just to add on to what Khroman, you just said, maybe I'm a little bit exaggerating here the importance of what Rahman said. I mean, I guess during those hours or those days, Taliban sent like hundreds of fighters to surround Panjshir, and the discussion on social media was that they are going to attack on Massoud's anti-Taliban groups. So then you have the statement from Tajik president, and that fight didn't happen. And now there is a discussion taking place between these two groups. Whether it has to do anything with Rahman's statement, I don't know. But this is what happened on the ground. So maybe Paul or maybe Bruce, feel free to take this question. Maybe Paul, it goes to you as a former diplomat. So you mentioned earlier, Paul, that Rahman is increasingly active these days, like the call to President Macron. What he's trying to do?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting. I also noted he gave a very long speech yesterday highlighting all of the wonderful things that Tajikistan has achieved in its 30 years of independence. So I think, you know, as this chaos is unfolding south of the border, and as, you know, refugees and other people are moving, you know, across the border, you know, he, I think, is trying to highlight his success as a leader, as somebody who is after a very difficult year and a half, but also, you know, presenting himself as a more of a senior statesman and somebody who actually has clout. I mean, Tajikistan is usually, you know, a laggard in regional cooperation, and here it seems to be pushing forward and getting noticed. I also, you know, to your other question, what is the Taliban's response? I wonder how much of Rahman's very blunt statement was also meant for Pakistan, because I think, you know, Pakistan, yeah, as a backer of the Taliban is, you know, I think is probably pushing for recognition. And I think, you know, this is probably as much a blunt message to Pakistan, which I think is kind of, yeah, interesting as well.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, trying to show that, you know, Tajikistan has interests and Tajikistan is going to push for those interests. And I think that might be why he's suddenly gotten some notice from international leaders who generally don't pay a whole lot of attention to Tajikistan.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point there, Paul. Thank you. And also, as a former diplomat, one more question, diplomatic question to you, Paul. The Afghan ambassador to Tajikistan, the type of campaign he's running these days, the anti-Taliban campaign, in the diplomatic world, principles, protocols, can we see his activities having to do anything with the Tajikistan's broader position?
Well, I think he's certainly based in a country that will back him up. They're certainly, you know, based in a country that is certainly inclined to hear what he has to say. You know, he's in a very difficult position, though, because, you know, the government that he represents is no longer there. And so he's in a diplomatic service in a neighboring country without a real government to represent. So it's one of those, you know, very tough and very rare, you know, instances where diplomats are really left on their own. And he seems to be still talking about his views from who he worked for 2 weeks ago, as opposed to Afghan authorities for whatever that is today. So I think, you know, he's certainly pushing back I think echoing some of that and certainly probably making it clear that Tajikistan is at least a friendly place for former officials who are seeking places to be.
Mm-hmm. What the diplomatic protocol says, Paul, I mean, can he be doing this in isolation from Tajikistan as like a broader policy decision?
Well, I think he certainly could be. I mean, I think he's probably, in many ways, he's more of a visitor to Tajikistan, although he's probably still accredited there. But I think, you know, I certainly would think that the Tajik authorities, you know, are aware and at least are not objecting to that. And it'll be interesting to see whether this will be a place of, you know, Tajikistan will become more of a place of anti-Taliban, you know, resistance with, you know, others. It'd be interesting to know, you know, which officials of the former government are now in Tajikistan, you know, and where else they are, to sort of see whether this could become an area of anti-Taliban Afghan resistance.
Yeah. Two points on that, Powell. If this Afghan embassy became an offshoot of an anti-Taliban resistance for Afghanistan, this won't be the first time. You remember when the Taliban was running the country, last time in the 90s, the Afghan embassy in Dushanbe served like a press office of Northern Alliance, who would have the hold of the Afghan government in exile. So there is a precedent for that. Also, I'm sorry for pushing too many questions on your way, Paul. In the diplomatic language, you have a term called person non grata, like if the host country doesn't like the activity of an individual diplomat, they can declare him a person non grata. You know, Tajikistan is not doing it.
They can, they could expel the person. They could, it's called PNG, persona non grata. This is, you know, for anybody who watches U.S.-Russian relations, there's been a lot of those PNGing instances before. That doesn't seem to be happening, which suggests to me that, you know, the Tajikistan is probably fine with his statements. And it probably, you know, if Rahman is pushing back and if the Tajik people are also in line with sort of an anti-Taliban message, you know, I see that, you know, the government's probably perfectly fine with him saying what he's he is saying.
Yeah.
But very often, you know, states will do that. But, you know, the U.S. or a country might make a diplomatic statement, a press statement. Some countries might not like it, but they're not going to PNG it. But you know, he seems to be, given that there's no actually official government that he's representing, you know, he certainly could be told to knock it off, I think.
Interesting. And one other point, very important point, Roman. You know, you guys are reporting about the people having signed up or announced their commitment to join the anti-Taliban resistance in Afghanistan, along with those Panjshiri leaders. What's the story behind that?
The story is interesting. I think is, again, the source of this story is Facebook, which is very popular among Tajiks, and nowadays we could call it the most open platform to raise issues, very sensitive issues from Tajikistan. there are about 200 of them who say that they are ready to go to fight in anti-Taliban resistant campaign. But we have to strengthen that according to Tajik laws that was changed during 2015 on the peak of ISIS activity in Middle East. The Tajik government changed the law and offered punishment for everybody who is wishing or who is actively involved in foreign wars. So according to Tajik law, it is illegal. And on the first reaction from inside of Tajikistan, people like head of Democratic Party, we call it half pro-government party, he reminded about that law and told that it's not allowed for Tajik citizens to go and to fight in Afghanistan. Only people who are part of army members of this country could do it. So it is, I would call it another example of the atmosphere that we are observing in Tajikistan, and people really in Tajikistan, a lot of people really feel sorry for their neighbors and their concern. And before, I could say that it's not an lone example of people who were ready to go and to fight for their land and to support to other forces that they feel as allies. The same calls we observed during the last clash on the Tajik-Kyrgyz border in the end of April, and the same sentiments we heard. So it's really not an easy issue, easy task, and no one is ready to open his face and tell that, look, I am a person who is ready to take an arm and to go and to fight in Panjshir. But we hear a lot of calls on media, on social media. We were seeing that a lot of people were supporting them. But not any legal procedure after that we could see because of this law, I think.
That's very interesting. That was my second point. I was just wondering about that when you were talking. You know, so the number of those people are in hundreds, not in thousands, I guess. So you are saying like...
No, thousands, about 200 and people according to our information.
So this,
you know, Mohammed, but I wanted to add a very, very small issue regarding the Tajikistan's seemingly active role in Afghan issue. I think that Tajikistan, we know that Tajikistan is not on a position of telling something very important from the regional point of view, at least I mean in Central Asia, because of locality, because of the neighboring with Afghanistan, because of its socio-political problems. But Afghanistan itself is the issue that brings pain and at the same time money and benefits to Tajik government. Because of Afghanistan, there are a lot of programs that could be benefited by Dushanbe in either way of, I think, the role of this country as a transition country or as a country that could somehow support the migrants. We know that according to Tajik officials, I mean, Tajik official position, and the Russia that Putin, you know, that told that he is opposite of bringing Afghan migrants to territory of Central Asia. You know about it. Tajikistan until now never told that it's ready to accept Afghan refugees. But according to our information, there are at least 143 people were asked asylum seeker or some protection on south of Tajikistan, and a lot of government or some military representatives among them. Tajik government never commented it. But this issue could be the one point of Tajik government to raise some financial support from the international community. If you remember, during this historic, we are talking about meeting with Qureshi, right. One of the first lines that Imam Ali Rahmon mentioned was regarding the humanitarian catastrophe. It's, I think that it is he somehow sends the message that if you wish us to see as a partners the part that could help, somehow help to those people, you have to support us. And additionally, talk to Macron and his invitation to see Paris and to be in Yeliseï in October, according to latest information. In Twitter, we read it today that head of European Union Council, Charles Michel, during yesterday talk with Emom Ali Rahmon, he also stressed the same attitude toward Afghanistan. He told that we agree with Tajikistan's position, and he told CEO in Brussels in October. So I think that one could be one issue that could be raised during those European tour of Emom Ali Rahmon would be some financial help to Tajikistan from the context of Afghanistan.
He is certainly trying to leverage the situation to raise his profile, not only in the country, also outside the country. Very, very interesting. We never have any such a long podcast speaking only about Tajikistan, but it's just such a interesting debate. But we still have a couple of points to raise while going towards the end of the conversation. Bruce, one question, it comes to my mind from the spectacle attack at the Kabul airport by ISIS Khorasan. You know, when we think of ISIS Khorasan, certainly think of some of the Central Asian militants who have joined that group, and they are still in Afghanistan. And, you know, we also know that some of their members are Tajiks and Uzbeks and Chechens and all the other nations, Pakistanis. So when they hear what Rahmon is talking about openly, apparently an anti-Taliban message, when they listen to what Rahmon is saying, what they are hearing?
Well, I imagine that ISK or groups that aren't affiliated with the Taliban, that are extremist groups in Afghanistan, probably look at him as nothing more than a stooge anyway. A corrupt dictator, and he's not going to score any points with those people by saying the Taliban should have this kind of government or that kind of government. I think that ISK has pretty much shown they're against everybody. I'm trying to think of what government they've ever said, I don't follow them all that much, but obviously they have people who are helping to finance them in places, but there's no government has ever, they've never said this government's good or that government's good or something like that. I mean, the only government they think is good is the one that they're trying to make. Rahmon wouldn't score any points with them. And he's still, as far as they're concerned, him and his government
but are they scoring any points? Are they scoring any points from what Rahmon is saying?
Are they scoring any points? What, ISK?
Yeah, from what Rahmon is saying.
Oh, he would denounce them probably worse if he actually mentioned
them. No. What I was saying is, Bruce, like you said, by saying all these, Rahmon is not making any score. But are the members of the ISIS-K, are they scoring any points from what Rahmon is saying about the Taliban?
Oh boy, I don't know. I don't really see it.
Okay.
Rahmon is, he's come to some prominence because he actually had some nasty statements to make about the Taliban, and he's alone of the neighbors in having that position, alone of Afghanistan's neighbors. But I don't think that he's really ISK is getting any good publicity out of this or sees any opportunity to use his words to further their own cause. I just don't I don't make that connection at all.
Okay No, that's a good point. Okay, so what's next? Oh, wait, before that, the traffic, Hiroman, the traffic at the Shir Khan port, has there been any change in that in recent days, like in 10 days or maybe after Wednesday's statement? And the Shir Khan port, as you know, our audience know, controlled by the Taliban on the Afghan side. So last we discussed this issue that there was a traffic, though less than before, but there's still traffic. The border post is open. Trucks are passing to Tajikistan, and although the Afghan side of the border is controlled by the Taliban. So has there been any change on that traffic recently?
We didn't hear any new information regarding that issue, but as I know from the sources that are available for us, We have information only regarding these dozens of Afghans who seek support from Tajik government after 15th of August, the day when they came to Kabul. So this information is maybe very limited, but that is all that we have. But we know that Tajik government talked about, for example, the electricity transfer to Afghanistan. They told that we are working according to our contracts. We never stopped it because we signed agreements. The same statement was done a day before by Uzbek authorities. So there are, yes, limited information about the current situation, I mean the current economic or some, but it's not broad information, you know, comprehensive.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting, right? I mean, on one hand, President Rahman is taking this kind of public position against the Taliban. On the other hand, electricity is going to Afghanistan, certainly now controlled by the Taliban, and border might still be open. I have not heard anything contrary that it's closed. That's very, very interesting. Anyway, you know, so there is a lot to talk about, but we need to wrap up the conversation here. So in terms of the question, what's next? So what's next for Rahman? What you are expecting to see him say or do going forward after all this statement? Powell, Bruce, Roman, anyone jump in. This will be my single question, and I will be interested to hear your brief comments about this. Let's start with you, Paul, then.
Okay. First, I forget who said it, but I think some of his statements and, you know, being very, very forward-leaning and, you know, the prospect of a large humanitarian crisis, I do think he probably also is looking for some humanitarian assistance, particularly, you know, should larger numbers of people try to cross. And I know that the United States has been looking at, you know, various countries that are helping with refugees and providing assistance. So I'm pretty sure, I think that's something to sort of continue to watch to see how many people end up, you know, crossing over. And I think, you know, a lot will depend on what sort of, you know, how this new government, you know, plays out. I think the airport attack by ISIS highlights that it's still a very combustible, very dangerous situation. And that, you know, the Taliban, while it is formally in control, it's even the Taliban can't control everything. And so I think there's still lots of risk ahead for Tajikistan and lots of risk ahead just generally for the entire region.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will also be watching at what comes out of this anti-Taliban force in Panjshir, what direction it will take going forward and where Tajikistan stands on that. I mean, certainly the latest rhetoric by Rahman is all directed to, you know, what's going on in Panjshir. And of course, as Paul, you said, how the government is going to shape up and what position Tajikistan is going to take in terms of when the time comes in to recognize or not recognize the next government. Anyway, Bruce and Roman, where you guys will be looking at, watching at, in terms of what comes next from the presidential palace in Tajikistan with regards to Afghanistan, where your eyes will be. Roman, let's go with you.
It's really, really hard to say because the presidential palace of Tajikistan became during last years one of the closed buildings for journalists. But on prospect of the rapid challenges that we are observing in Afghanistan, I think that this issue would be the top priority for Tajik government that is now for last few years was taking huge preparation for 30th anniversary of its independence, but the Afghanistan situation put shadow on all those plans. Although they are going forward with everything that related to this program, but Afghanistan issue would be the most big priority for Tajik government, and they still have their ambassador in Kabul, as we learned from a few days ago. It means that Tajikistan closely watching what's going on in side of the country and is not going to quit the issue or to forget about the pulse of the country to know what's going on there. But this Afghanistan issue is become the big priority for this government from a lot of points of view. But as I told before, the last decision regarding their relationship with the future government of Afghanistan. Would it be Islamic Emirate or would it be a terrorist group that would be with the same bad strategy as people say? They have to cooperate somehow. They have come on board there, and it is a really, really matter of concern for Tajikistan. And Tajikistan never faced, I think, during its history, such a challenge from this country. And all, I think, minds would be put there. And of course, with the support of international society, because Tajikistan could not be alone, and it's rely mostly on pro-Russian structures. Therefore, you mentioned about drills that are actively we are observing in Tajikistan, and also international and Western community. A few days later, we are waiting for coming of Ministry for Foreign Affairs of Mr. Heiko Maas, German Foreign Minister, to Tajikistan, who is going to visit close Afghan neighbors. It would be Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and Pakistan, and we will see what would be the main outcome from this meeting. Mm-hmm. So Afghanistan would be priority for the government for sure.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think ACSTO is planning another military drill soon in Kyrgyzstan, and then in Tajikistan. I think it will be another drill that has happened over the past couple
and
of days.
And also, they are going to meet in the middle of September. The ACSTO meeting and Shanghai cooperation. The president of those organizations are going to attend the Dushanbe annual meeting. It would be the most important meeting that they already told that would be dedicated mostly to Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. And the statement I read about the upcoming drill, CSTO drill, they clearly say that this is happening because the developing situation in Afghanistan. So that's very interesting. And Bruce, last point. So now that we know where Rahmon stands more publicly with regards to situation in Afghanistan, so what will be his next step, the indication of what he is going to do next about Afghanistan and how soon he will take that step?
Wow. I mean, he's going to be reacting to events in Afghanistan like everybody else. So it really kind of, a lot of that's going to depend on what happens inside Afghanistan. I think, you know, for right now, he probably thinks that everything's going well. You know, as has been mentioned already in the podcast, he's got what people say publicly and what they think privately are two different things. And Rahmon is saying what a lot of people think privately. So, you know, his comments, his statements play well internationally and they're playing well domestically. And as long as that's working, I can't imagine that he would change his position at all. But, you know, again, this really depends on, you know, what happens inside Afghanistan, and that's just anybody's guess. 2 weeks from now, you know, who knows what it's going to be like there. So he's got to react to the situation like everybody else.
Do you think perhaps President Mirziyoyev to follow his footsteps in his rhetoric?
I don't think so. You know, Uzbekistan, for what it's worth, has established a different relationship with the Taliban, you know, certainly much different than the relationship they had more than 20 years ago. But but they seem to have come to some kind of understanding, you know, and it wasn't an accident that Qureshi, when he was in Uzbekistan, brought up the, you know, the Termez to Karachi railway, which actually might be the only project that could work under the current circumstances in Afghanistan. You know, Uzbekistan wants to export its stuff. Business is business. And you might not like some of the partners that you have to deal with, but if you get what you want out of it, you know, a lot of people go along with odious partners throughout the world, as long as, you know, for economic reasons. So, you know, I think Uzbekistan's still in that position right now where they're thinking maybe this can still work for them. Whereas Tajikistan clearly has decided that they get nothing from a Taliban government. And so, no, they don't want that government there.
But in terms of the motivation that's apparently driving President Rahmon to say what he said about the Taliban, and that applies in the same way to Uzbekistan, isn't it? I mean, they have large number of ethnic Uzbeks in Afghanistan, and they want to see those Uzbeks given their rights when the new government comes in. They want those Uzbeks not to be humiliated, not to be ignored, just to steal Rahman's word there, isn't it? I mean, the Uzbekistan don't like Islamic militancy of any sort, like Tajikistan don't. I mean, those things also applies to Uzbekistan, isn't it? I mean, how come Uzbekistan is not in line in terms of thinking with Rahman?
Yeah, I suppose, again, you know, I think the government is looking at this and figuring on the balance. They get more out of maintaining the relationship they have with the Taliban than they do by antagonizing. I'm sure there's a great sympathy for the plight of the ethnic Uzbeks in Afghanistan. You know, the Uzbek government is going to look at this, at least so far, they're trying to look at this from an economic point of view. So as far as I can tell. And so they're leaving the door open to some kind of relationship with the Taliban, and making a statement like Rahman made would just, that would be the end of that. You know, and let's face it, you know, this, especially in Uzbekistan's case, there's a lot of infrastructure has been built in the last 20 years to try to link Central Asia to Afghanistan and further south and stuff. And most of that goes through Uzbekistan.
Paul, I know, just one point, Bruce, there. So, Paul, you know, I know that you worked also on Uzbekistan's position versus Tajikistan's towards the new developing situation in Afghanistan. So, you know, we understand at this moment Uzbekistan doesn't want to antagonize Taliban because of their own business interests. But soon, I guess, Uzbekistan has to make a decision, say something about, and the indication is going to be when the time comes whether to recognize the Taliban government or not. What position Uzbekistan is going to take when that point comes in?
I mean, I think it's still up in the air. I think, you know, Tajikistan has made it pretty clear. I think, you know, it sort of probably depends on what sort of, whether there is some sort of inclusive government. But I think, you know, there seems to be a fair amount of, I don't know if it's confusion or lack of clarity coming out of Tashkent. I think privately, they are probably very close to what Rahmon has said. But as Bruce is right, I mean, they really do, you know, all that infrastructure, everything that's, you know, supposed to go and connect Central Asia to South Asia. It goes through Uzbekistan and through Afghanistan. So, you know, for the trade, you know, it is important, particularly for a landlocked country like that. I also, you know, think that, you know, in authoritarian states, we don't really think a whole lot about elections, but there's an Uzbek election coming through. And I think, you know, probably, you know, staying out of this, not rocking the boat, not sort of either antagonizing the Taliban or antagonizing people if you're not advocating for your co-ethnics across the border. You know, I think we might get more clarity on the Uzbek position in a few months. The problem is that, you know, I expect that this to be a continually evolving situation. And, you know, there might be a government that's going to be, you know, difficult for them to deal with in a few months. But, you know, I also, you know, both countries, you know, they're claiming that they're not taking a whole lot of people. And I don't think they are taking a whole lot of people. But I do understand, you know, there's people transiting through. I understand there's some Afghan officials, including some very prominent ones, also who've gone and found refuge in Uzbekistan. So, you know, there's some similarities going on between the two, except that Uzbekistan is far more quiet. Yeah. That could be by design. It could be because the election. It could be because their policies are still in the works. Particularly, it's probably more challenging given their greater economic interests in Afghanistan.
Very, very interesting points there. Thank you very much, Paul. You know, apparently, Rahmon's open position with regards to Taliban is a positive point for his legacy, his political legacy, it looks like, because it is kind of a rallying point for everyone. And again, we also know that there is also election or selection. Something is coming up very soon in which I guess the rumor is that Rahmon would be willing to put his son to replace him when the time comes. Anyway, I think we should end the conversation here. Thank you very much, Paul Stronsky, Senior Fellow in Carnegie Endowment's Russia and Eurasia Program. Khiroman Bekiva, Senior Journalist with Radio Free Prida Liberty's Tajik Service, locally known as Radio Azadi. Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Prida Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your time today. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Prida Liberty's Media Manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.